We're two friends in the early stages of our coaching careers on a 100-day mission to make low-cost, high-impact life and money coaching accessible to as many people as possible and to explore our developing coaching practice along the way. As we take part in this experiment, we're sharing our thoughts on the process, the challenges, the successes, and lots more. Welcome to the 100-Day Coaching Project. Stacey, here we are.
Hi, last one.
We've come to the end of the road.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, 100 days has flown by, actually. At times it felt very slow. Mm-hmm. At times it felt very fast. But now, sitting here at the end, it's like, wow, 100 days.
Yeah, it sounds like a really long time. And it is a long time to practice something daily and to develop new habits and commit to it every day whilst life is going on in the meantime.
And it's, you know, it's not, you know, if you think about actually working days in the year, 100 days is over a third of your working year. So it's a significant amount of time to invest in anything, really.
Yeah.
If you went to the gym for 100 days straight, you'd see a real difference.
It's true. And well, and we'll talk about it, but we've both definitely seen some differences. So it's been a worthwhile endeavor to spend 100 days practicing, I think.
I love it. So to help us kind of make sense of these next 100 days, we've got some really kind of boring but useful questions.
Yeah.
Questions that should help us get into it. So the first of those is, Stacey, why did you do this project?
I did this project because you asked me to, and you are definitely somebody I wanted to do some work with. Secondly, because I trained to be a money coach back in summer 2016, and I'd not dedicated enough time after getting the qualification to the practice of being a money coach. So it came at a very good time for me, having just quit my job
mm-hmm. and
starting to build a freelance or portfolio career, as they call it. So it was an opportune moment for me to commit to doing more money coaching. And this was a great framework in which I could do that. So yes.
Mm.
How about you? Why did you do it?
I needed someone to help me take the first step.
Mm.
And so, to echo what you said, I need someone to sort of say yes to being part of it as well. I sort of had an idea that I wanted to do it, and I sort of guess I knew that it would be valuable for me. But it felt like sort of a big commitment to make, and I wasn't sure if I could do it.
Yeah.
So reaching out to you and having somebody else to do it with made it more doable, made me more accountable to do it as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was great. What made me think to do it, I guess, was I'd had sort of some tentative coaching experiences, and I was trying to work out whether the feeling I'd had in some of those experiences, which was just, wow, this feels like really exciting work that feels very much like me
yeah.
and like what I might want to do in the future. I didn't really know whether it was, so I didn't really want to just dive right in and spend a lot of money doing some training or something like that. I figured, okay, well, I've got a tiny bit of experience. What if I just pretended I was a coach,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just really kind of committed to thinking about myself as a coach and trying to be a coach for a period of time, 100 days in this context. How would I feel at the end of that? And so mm-hmm. it was really almost like a sort of a dare to myself. You know, if you think this might be it, then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, it's been a really playful way to test what is usually a really big decision. Like, is this a career that I want to commit to? And it feels like it's been quite a risk-free and fun way to test that and still holding it quite lightly.
I think actually the smartest thing we did in the whole project was to call it an experiment.
Yeah.
Because not only did it kind of, I guess, make the invitation to others slightly more accessible, it just made me hold it more lightly. at times when I felt pressure or I felt nervous or I felt anxious, I could just remind myself, well, it's only an experiment. It could go wrong. And so, yeah, I think sometimes I struggle because I want to be good at something. You know, if I do something, I want to be good at it. And if I'm not good at it, then it sometimes feels less exciting or less like I want to dedicate and devote lots of time and energy to it. And that's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario, right? And so calling it an experiment gave me a chance to not be good at it.
Yeah.
And to still do stuff and move forward with it. One thing I was thinking about around this is, and it's maybe not something I was so conscious of at the beginning, is it's quite a useful way to market this thing. So to put it out there as a sort of a limited time offer, an experiment, an invitation for others to kind of go on a bit of a learning journey with you, you know, to invest in your personal development.
Yeah.
Was quite an interesting kind of way to put the invitation out there. And I think quite a few people that turned up as clients wanted to invest in me, I think. I think they cared enough in my development. Not all of them. Many of them were just like, I want a coach. Yeah. And probably I want quite a cheap coach as well. and I think you might be quite good at it. But there was also a few people who turned up who came because they sort of thought, you know, Scott's pretty great and, you know, I want to give him that chance to be even better.
Mm.
And so I think there's something in that. There's something kind of curious and interesting for me in that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And we were also very open about we're still developing who we are as a coach and what our style is.
Yeah.
Which was great to take clients on the journey with us, but it also gave us permission to test different styles and approaches and adapt our coaching styles and experiment with the tools we used and how we showed up as a coach. So
it's such a good point, actually. Along the way, lots of people have said, you know, who's your niche? You know, what's your approach to coaching? And, you know, I found the question really hard and quite sort of, I guess it's a challenge because I haven't figured those answers out completely yet. But this model, this kind of approach that we took, this experiment, this project, gave me, you know, permission to say, I'm playing around with a few different models.
Yeah.
I'm exploring what my niche might be. You know, and I didn't have to lie about that. That's just the truth. But it kind of made, you know, in the context of an experiment, no one would question that. They wouldn't say, oh, this guy hasn't got his shit together. He doesn't know what he's doing, right? And so I think, again, I guess in a way an experiment is much easier for people to invest in too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perhaps the client turns up with softer expectations. And within that space of, you know, not having to have all the answers or be the supremely trained coach and the client having kind of softer expectations, there's quite a lot of room for play and exploration, which I think benefits the client as well, actually. I don't mind the idea of continuing to do some experiments. And I've been thinking more recently about, you know, what I do as a practice, right? Not as a business or as a service, although maybe it is those things too, but as a practice, something that I practice every day, which implies it needs practice.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't some finished, complete thing. I don't have all of the skills I need or I could bring to bear. I'm developing, and that's what a practice helps you to do, is to develop. And so I sort of like that idea, you know, and that's partially what an experiment taps into too. So I quite like the idea of this experiment thing. I think we were onto a winner with that one. Awesome. Second question.
Mm-hmm.
What did you hope to get out of it, Stacey? I mean, I'm asking you them. It feels a bit like an interview. You know, what? Why? You know, there's the why, and then there's like, in your wildest dreams, what were you hoping would be the result of this?
When we first started out, I was hoping to get significantly more hours of practice and face-to-face or over the phone or video call, but time with clients in a coaching session. And then was also hoping that that would give me some very clear articulation of who I was as a coach and how I wanted to pitch myself. And then I could do that and then market it, and then clients would appear and it would be a financially sustainable career for me. And by the summer of 2019, I was a financially sustained money coach doing all this great money coaching work. And that was my career and that was who I am.
Simples, right?
Easy. As easy as that. As we've gone through the experiment, what I hoped to get out of it, I've been surprised in lots of ways and lots of things that I've got out of it that I wasn't expecting in a lovely way. And my idea of what I've now got out of it is different, but even better. So I'm much more comfortable with sometimes being a money coach.
Right.
And using my money coaching in ways that I hadn't thought about before, like partnering with people on other projects or using my coaching practice in other types of work. And being comfortable with it not having to be financially sustainable to say that I'm a successful money coach. So my definition of what a successful money coach looks like to me and how I serve my clients and how the practice serves me as a career, but also just within my life generally, has changed in a way that's a lot more freeing. I've got so much more out of it and so many different things out of it than I was expecting.
That's so awesome. It's, I'd probably echo the same sentiment to some extent. You know, a lot of the things I expected or hoped for at the beginning didn't materialize, but then that's fine because actually, you know, the things that did materialize were even more valuable potentially. Things that I wanted or that I hoped to get out of it, I was reflecting back to kind of some of the way I was feeling when I first, you know, reached out to you and first thinking about this, was that I wanted to get as many coaching hours as possible. I wanted, I think like you, to get more of a sense of what role, you know, coaching would play in my life and in my career. You know, I think I, like you, felt like, do I want to be a full-time coach?
Yeah. Right?
And I'm going to, you know, this will help me decide to be a full-time coach. Not whether I want to be a full-time coach, but kind of to decide to be.
Yeah.
I wanted to coach a wide range of clients. That's something I said earlier up. I wanted to make a bit of money. And I think obviously tied into that was that I wanted to try charging for my services. And related to that, begin better understanding, you know, how clients value the work that I do and how I value the work that I do. So those all seemed, you know, completely reasonable at the start. And I think reading them back now, they feel reasonable too, but I guess, you know, the numbers is where it sort of became interesting. You know, as many coaching hours as possible. I think to begin with, I was like, well, I'll probably just get 100 hours in 100 days. And I went, that seems like a nice round number. You know, spoiler alert, I didn't get 100 hours. I did get a really powerful sense of what one-to-one coaching is for me and what it's not. And so I just developed a much deeper understanding of how it energizes me and what value it brings to my life. And also what a sustainable career would look like if I just did this. And not just sustainable financially, but energetically and emotionally.
Yeah.
And also, you know, in terms of my curiosity, you know, what I want to get out of life and the kind of domains I want to play in. Also, in all sorts of ways, I guess I went in, as I said, very much thinking, this will tell me, you know, that I want to be a coach.
Yeah.
And I think coming out of it, what it's perhaps made me think more is, it's made me double down on the idea that there's so much value in this practice. you know, this coaching practice and the skills and behaviours and, you know, the developing capacity around this area, and that one expression of those is one-to-one coaching.
Yeah.
But that there are other expressions, and indeed kind of expressions of who I am as a person,
mm-hmm.
that have become kind of more interesting to explore as well. You know, whether it's workshop facilitation, whether it's group facilitation,
mm-hmm.
Working with entrepreneurs, more mm-hmm. specifically on very tightly thought through business ideas. You know, there's quite a lot of different stuff that's emerging around the set of behaviors and skills that coaching, you know, encapsulates that are still interesting to me. So I guess I'm clear that, you know, one-to-one coaching is going to play a role.
Yeah.
But it's not, doesn't have to be everything. And I love the way you put it, right? It takes the pressure off it having to be everything.
Yeah.
It's not my whole career. It doesn't have to be. And I quite like that. I didn't make enough money to survive, which is great. You learn a lot through that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I did coach a wide range of clients. So that, in that sense, I was really, really happy. And I did charge for my services, and people turned up and they paid.
Yeah.
And so in many respects, I look back and say it was really, really successful along, you know, the lines that I hoped it might be. But it's also given me so much more, you know. Not least one key thing to come out of it is the importance of this reflective practice. You know, we'll talk a bit more about that, you know, when we get into some of the bigger learnings that come out of it. But while we're kind of thinking about how successful it was, should we talk about numbers?
Should we quickly? Yes.
Let's try, yeah. I finally turned up to one of these podcasts with some numbers written down, so I feel like I actually know a little bit what I'm talking about.
Oh, awesome.
So maybe I'll kick off.
Go on.
In the interests.
Yeah.
So I decided I wasn't going to coach on the weekends because that sort of felt like creating a rod for my own back. So if I decided I was going to coach weekends, then maybe suddenly I'm coaching weekends and I've got clients who expect to be coached on weekends, and maybe I want my weekends for myself. So from a sustainability point of view, I sort of made that call. And I think most people don't want to be coached on the weekends. They also want their weekends. I'm not averse to it.
Yeah.
But then that's why when I was thinking about it, it's basically 69 days out of 100 a weekdays. So of those 69 days, I had 33 coaching sessions, totaling 37.5 hours. I had 24 hours of professional training as a coach in that period, which feels also really great. Not something I thought particularly would be part of the 100-day experience, right?
Yeah.
But I'm really glad it was. And actually, if I were designing a perfect 100-day experiment, I would make sure that training was a key part of that too.
Definitely.
And I think the combination of training, reflective practice, and, you know, experience coaching has been so valuable, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 33 coaching sessions, 64% were paid. So that's 21 of the 33 were paid. At £40 a pop, £840. So for 100 days, it doesn't look like it doesn't look like a very sustainable way to make money. But do you know, it
just, for 37 and a half hours.
Yeah, yeah. So it's what? It's like you're getting £25 an hour. Listen, you know, people get paid far less,
yeah.
you know, for doing work that that perhaps feels less rewarding.
Mm.
I think not factored into this is all the work around the coaching sessions, right? And so when you look at it that way, I'm probably getting paid about £1.50 an hour. But that's okay, right? This was an experiment. It wasn't designed to make me a millionaire. And I got to test out a whole bunch of things around how I talked about money. You know, I think in one of our earlier podcasts, we were both practicing a little bit how to talk about money, how to steer the conversation towards fees and things like that.
Yeah.
So I've got 33 coaching sessions where I had, you know, many, many more opportunities to discuss money, to talk about value and those sorts of things. I did this just out of sort of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
If I had charged for every single session I ran, I would have taken £1,320. Which again, for about a third of the year's working time, doesn't feel like a particularly sustainable income of about £4,000 a year. But I did many other things around this work as well. So, you know, as a supplementary income,
yeah,
you know, I not to be sniffed at. Total clients coached, 11 different clients over the period. So that felt pretty good. I mean, it could have been many more, I think, if I'd been a bit more proactive about business development.
Yeah.
But that's a great learning to take out of it too, right? And, you know, going back to my point about coaching a variety of different clients, you know, senior consultants, CEOs, startup founders, high growth companies, university student, social enterprise founder, really diverse.
Amazing.
You know, really kind of mixed bag of different people coming from all sorts of different perspectives, you know. Very interesting for me to see kind of what came up for me in relation to those. But yeah, when I look at the numbers now, yes, I can see that there's like so much scope for more, but I'm so proud, right? I am actually just really proud. That's 33 more coaching sessions than I might have done, right? Had I not kind of found this structure. You know, it's £840, right? You know, again, it's not to be sniffed at.
I would definitely have taken that.
Yeah.
Someone said this would be the outcome at the end of the 100 days.
100%. 100%. So, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, success really. It looks like success to me, with lots of room for improvement, which is probably the ideal combo, right? What about for you? What about your numbers?
So my numbers... So I had 21 coaching sessions. I don't know how many hours that is in total, because some of them were longer than an hour.
Yep.
But I also did, so that was one-to-one clients, and that included 8 new clients.
That's great.
Yeah, and again, a real variety. A fund manager, a freelance photographer, somebody who makes the food that appears in films, which I never knew was a job.
Wow.
How amazing is that? A graduate, someone who works in a fintech startup, so a real variety. But then alongside those 21 one-to-one sessions, I've done 17 workshops.
Wow.
So I've done group money coaching, which I've loved. And that's been from graduates in a financial services company to homeless kids in Elephant and Castle and everything in between. And that's been something that has evolved for me throughout the 100 days is my preference towards group money coaching. So I'm really pleased that I've got so much practice with those workshops. Yeah.
Awesome. That's
and
really cool.
Being a money coach, I haven't even tracked.
Oh, yeah.
How many?
I mean, to clarify, like the money thing was sort of like the lowest rung in terms of things I was interested in getting out of the experience.
Yeah.
It was still, I still felt it was important, but you know, if I'd made no money, right? If you know, not a single client had turned up and said they wanted to pay, that would have been a point of reflection. I would have learned something through that experience too.
Yeah.
However, if no one had turned up for coaching, it would have felt like a, you know, a model that didn't work. So I was happier to have lots of experience and less fussed about whether that turned up with money or not. Whatever numbers you end up with at the end are kind of moment for pause and reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. The money piece for me is continually fascinating because, you know, I think you expressed it really well earlier. You know, it has to meet or serve me. You know, the work has to serve my needs, and some of those needs are financial.
Yeah.
You know, so understanding what that needs to look like is really valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at times during the 100 days where the load has been heavier and where the load outside of the coaching has been heavier, emotionally, physically, you know, psychologically, you know, I can see how, you know, to sustain myself throughout the work, you know, charging a bit more for the work makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because charge less, you have to do more of the work. Your capacity to do more of the work is challenged by stuff happening outside of the work as well as the, you know, what arrives in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think finding that balance, you know, the right amount of money to charge or the fees to charge that meet the client where they are, you know,
yeah,
and that at the same time meet my own needs for sustainability as a person.
Yeah.
You know, alongside the other work that I'm doing potentially. So, you know, for me, the money thing is really interesting, but if it said £8.40, I still would have found it interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I think our definition of having a successful career as a coach is obviously wider than how much money we make from it. But it will always be a part of that. And I think
spoken like a true money coach.
Yeah. Well, I think charging for services has helped me think about, well, it's been some part of definition of how competent I am as a coach, how confident I am as a coach, and in around my confidence in charging for invoicing, pitching and negotiating price. So developing my confidence as a coach, and also my commitment to the coaching and a client's commitment to the coaching. So it's still fascinating how I show up and how clients show up who are paying for the coaching themselves versus whether their company or an organization is paying it for them, or I'm doing it for free.
Yeah.
And it's still really interesting seeing how I show up and they show up differently in those scenarios. So there's definitely, it is something that I will go back and track, but reflect against, okay, of the ones that paid, was it different? Was there anything that was consistent in the paying clients that didn't show up in the clients who weren't paying or someone else was paying for them?
You can learn a lot about this whole thing through the lens of money, can't you, money coach Stacey? No, but I think it's so true, right?
Yeah.
How much money you earn or the fees you charge is the sort of quantitative metric.
Yeah.
But there's a qualitative piece to it as well, which is about how you show up, how the clients show up, what the engagement's like.
Definitely.
That's lost in the numbers slightly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is why, and it's kind of a perfect segue, if we move from kind of a chat about our numbers to, you know, what some of the biggest learnings we've taken out of this.
Mm.
You know, for me, the biggest learning, in a way, has been the value of a reflective practice.
Yeah.
You know, so not just kind of tracking my data in a spreadsheet and being clear on what my numbers are and just kind of trying to get the numbers up as much as possible, volume, 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 but also having time and space within that practice to sit down either by myself, but also significantly with you to say, how's it been? And, you know, just to have a space where I can discuss quite openly and honestly, it's been good, it's been bad, it's been challenging, it's been easy, it's been unusual.
Yeah.
You know, to have that space for me, I think, is something I crave, something that I value, and something that I think has really supported the growth of my confidence and also a more mindful approach to the work I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than kind of rushing ahead to build up numbers or to get the clients in, perhaps I've moved a bit more slowly, but I feel like I've kind of deepened my learning and my development through that reflective practice. So for me, outside of the 100-day coaching project, the question that I take forward and one of the big learnings that kind of, I guess, animates that question is, how do I meet that need for a reflective practice along the way?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's hugely valuable for me. And something that helps me to grow. So I mean, there's many others, but that's one for starters. What about you? What's one of the big ticket items to take out of this?
I would absolutely echo a reflective practice being the most valuable part for me. I would also say having a wider definition of what being a coach is, and how many different creative ways we've come up with for using our coaching practice and our skills as coaches in other projects and other areas of our life.
Mm.
So not holding on to this view that I had of what being a coach looks like is sitting down having one-to-one coaching sessions with clients.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that part of it, but freeing up to think, how else can I be a coach? How else can I use these coaching skills? What projects am I really interested in doing? And how can I bring myself as a coach to those projects? Has just opened so many opportunities for me. So thinking about, I have the skills of a coach, and I am a practicing coach. How can I take that into the world rather than saying I need more one-to-one clients to call myself a coach? That's been really interesting. I think my second one would be not being too fixated on needing to have a clear definition of what my style is as a coach and who I'm coaching. Mm-hmm. So giving myself permission to not have a niche.
Yeah.
And actually it being quite a positive thing to be able to adapt my style, use different styles, have a real varied toolkit that I can use with clients. And not rushing to be like, no, this is who I am as a coach. These are the types of tools I use. These are the kind of goals and objectives that I help you with. And, you know, this is who you are. And yeah. I'll only work with people who are like this or who are working on this. That might happen naturally over time, but I'm a lot more comfortable with saying, oh, I'm a money coach. What do you need help with? Okay, I have this range of tools and maybe we can use this, this, and this, and let's try this with a varied group of people still.
I love that one. That's, 100%. Yeah, for me too. There's this thing where, you know, you're sort of encouraged to have a niche. You're strongly encouraged to kind of focus your attention so that you can sell yourself, basically, and so that people who want that thing can find you really easily.
Yeah.
I can see the value in that completely. And I think, to your point, at some stage, maybe that's the direction I'll head in. But I'm still really enjoying working with a real variety of different people. And, you know, we were talking before this call started in one of my more recent coaching sessions. You know, the practice or the tool that was most useful was my guitar playing.
Yeah.
Which I would never consider to be valuable from a coaching perspective, but turned up in this particular coaching session as a wonderful metaphor to lead the coachee through a process of kind of feedback around a, you know, a business process they were redesigning. Now, you know, if I zeroed in on the idea that I was a CTI trained transformational coach, you know, with this set of CTI tools and the CTI toolbox,
yeah,
you know, I use that as an example because that's the training I'm currently undergoing, not to kind of throw them under the bus. But I think, you know, breadth of experience, you know, seeing everything in life as a tool, you know. I remember having a conversation with somebody I was training with. You know, my mum dying has been an amazing set of information, you know, experience and tool to bring to my practice. But I probably wouldn't go and train in my mum dying to bring that tool, you know, to bear in my coaching, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's that recognition that you can bring the whole of yourself into your work. You know, it's all a tool. It's all a routine. It's all a, it's all an asset, you know. And so recognizing that and just being able to hold on to that idea and resist this notion that, you know, there's a core set of tools I must have at my disposal. You know, yes, and what do I already have? What amazing skills do I already possess, experiences I have that I can articulate in a way that is really transformative for the clients that show up. That's also something that's, you know, that I'm finding a lot, you know, feeling my way into myself and my own style as a coach and sort of resisting that being, you know, something that needs to be labeled and given, you know, a set of clear, you know, parameters. I think I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. And the tools that the client already has. So the number of different ways, an obvious example with money coaching, but the number of different ways I've done budgeting with clients has been so varied. Like my maps with loads of different coloured pens, like they're from their like kids' playroom that we've like built something because they hate spreadsheets and they're more of a creative person versus, you know, doing something on a spreadsheet versus downloading the latest AI budgeting app and using that and setting up a client with that. Like, it's so varied, and I wouldn't want to limit the tools that I use based on my own experience or my own skills, because you also want to bring in who the client is and leverage skills that are most suited to who they are and how they work as well.
I love it. I love it. Before this call started, we were engaged in a really wide-ranging conversation, which touched on tea rooms and the way that tea rooms in Japan were designed and architected. And there's this concept of the abode of the unsymmetrical, which is a Zen concept where you build things that leave space for other people. And so that, you know, that is exactly what you just expressed, right? Understanding that in the rush to gather up all your own tools and knowledge and niches and all these clever things, maybe you crowd out the client who comes, you know, ready to imagine themselves into the process in a way that's new every single time. So yeah, I love that. I love that idea of again, the agenda being the client's agenda.
Definitely.
And we're there in service of that, right?
Yeah, I think before we started, I was very focused on who am I as a coach? What skills do I need as a coach? What tools do I need as a coach?
There's lots of me in that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And now I think, well, they're all secondary. If you can have a memorable, meaningful conversation that's very aligned and targeted to what the client's trying to achieve, if you can create space for them and for both of you to show up and have the conversations that they need and want to have, and if you have a rapport and a genuine connection with them that makes that coaching session really meaningful and memorable, the tools are kind of secondary and like the final step to actually achieving whatever it is that you want it to achieve. But making it like memorable, you know, having a connection and creating space, I feel like are the most important things. And they take a lot more trust as a coach, right? Because you can't guarantee that those things are going to happen. But through practice that we've had, I think we've both had more and more of those experiences, but trusting that those things are going to show up.
Yeah, and leaving space for them to show up. Yeah. Not getting so anxious that you fill the space with solving problems and fixing things.
Yeah.
It's a lovely way to express it. I think, I mean, so many lessons, but those seem to be the ones that stand out the most. What about if we sort of jump onto the flip side of that? Like what might... If you had your 100 days again, what else might you have done or what might you have done differently?
I would do more planning up front and set some milestones. So us having these regular podcasts has been incredibly helpful. I would have done more of those milestones.
And released them more often.
It's been amazing. Yeah. So maybe done...
Sorry, like, listeners.
All of our listeners. Committed to more podcasts, but also set milestones for me or us around other things too. Or small goals within the 100 days. So broken it down a little bit and been a bit more intentional around, I want to do this much marketing. Some more things that I could control. I want to practice this specific technique in the first 10 days, this in the second 10 days. So I would have done more planning and set some more milestones. And being a bit more disciplined around actively looking for clients. Definitely could have done more marketing.
Those both seem completely appropriate for me as well. I think the planning piece is great. I think there's space now at this point of reflection. You know, now I can look back and sort of say, oh, of course, I should totally have built in a few more, or I should totally have been more intentional about, or if I just thought about So I think this is that ideal moment where you get to say, okay, wouldn't it be great, you know, even better if moving forward, we take those things forward. So I completely agree about planning and especially building in those milestones. I mean, these podcasts have felt really, the word that springs to mind is nurturing. They've often arrived at the time when they needed to, right? So not just, you know, check-ins on how we're progressing, but sometimes just needed to have a chat to somebody else about, oh, God, I don't know what's going on. So I think that's been really useful, something that I hadn't thought the podcast would be useful for, but actually, you know, really useful. Marketing, clients, loads of them, yeah. I mean, I think some of that is bound up in the intentionality piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would almost, you know, if I were to do this thing again, I would say 100 days, 15 clients, X amount of sessions.
Yeah.
Or I would say 100 days, 50 clients,
mm-hmm.
you know, in mini sessions. I would kind of set a very kind of intentional goal. Still hold it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
Still not beat myself up, but setting a goal like that and then building a plan, you know, hours in the week and activities in those hours to generate the clients.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's outreach and social networks, whether it's talking at events, whether it's aggressively pursuing referrals. Aggressive maybe not being the right word, but you know what I mean. So I think it's that having a vision
mm-hmm.
for what wants to be achieved and then stepping back from the vision to kind of say, okay, what are the steps I took to get there?
Yeah.
And what actions did I have to take at each step to kind of propel myself forward there? It's felt a little bit haphazard. And certainly in amongst other work, which has just emerged or kind of taken shape within those 100 days, you know, you have to hold it relatively lightly. New opportunities come along, stuff in your personal or your social or your other aspects of your life arrive,
mm-hmm.
Like house guests, and we invite them all in. And so I think, yeah, I think being a bit more intentional, still holding on to that looseness or that lightness of holding those things, but certainly having a few more milestones. I think I would be probably much bolder. I would do things differently. I would say, this is really great and this price is very good for what it is. And I think be a bit bolder in negotiation, you know, and encourage, really, really kind of work harder to, you know, to sell, actually. Because I think not to get more clients or to make more money, but I think there's real value in it, honestly.
Mm.
And the amount of free coaching I've given away over the last 100 days in terms of conversations with people, catch-ups with people, chats with people, let alone the free coaching I've done in more formal sessions, you know, I've seen the benefit of an approach that looks a bit like coaching in my personal life, in my meaningful relationships, you know, in all sorts of different environments. And so I sort of look at that and say, you know, don't hide your light under a bushel.
Yeah.
You know, put yourself out there, because however it shows up, whether it's paid formal coaching, free pro bono coaching, or just being there for people,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is a really valuable thing to have and to offer generously.
Yeah.
You know, and to be kind of nervous around it sort of hides that value.
Yeah.
So I'd probably be bolder, you know, be more ready to kind of coach in every kind of way that it shows up.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I still struggle with it. I still find it really difficult, like without a tangible product, when you are the product and you're selling yourself, I still find it really difficult to charge people to spend time with me. Like,
right. It still crazy. Feels weird after 100 days, you know, I'm still having that conversation with myself. Like, isn't this just a meaningful chat with somebody who's quite good at chatting? Now, it's not, you know, I think it's so much more than that, right? But there's still that sense of, you know, is it worth it? You know, and I think you can sit around worrying about that quite a lot, but it doesn't really get you anywhere.
Yeah.
And so to some extent, this project's been amazing for just getting on and doing.
Yeah.
And still holding that and acknowledging that nervousness or that sense of an unresolved tension.
Yeah.
But just getting on, you know, and I imagine, you know, I think it's a healthy thing to have, right? You know, at times it just keeps you honest.
Yeah, definitely.
Feeling that way.
Definitely.
I think if it's holding you back, you want to you want to kind of let go a little bit of that, but at the same time, a little bit of it's quite handy. A little bit of that nervousness keeps you sharp.
That's true. That's true.
We've only got a few minutes left, so big, broad, slightly coachy, open-ended question. What next? You know, what else?
What next?
Yeah.
You
don't have to make any bold commitments at this stage, although obviously if you'd like to, you're welcome to.
Well, I'm absolutely going to continue with the practice. And I think I am going to plan, perhaps not 100 days. 100 days felt like a long time. So breaking it down a little bit and saying, you know, maybe in the next 30 days, I want to do this. Doing more workshops and more group money workshops. And I have actually booked my first solo Pakira group money coaching workshop on Saturday, yes, the 28th of September, where I'm going to trial my own tool that I've designed. So that feels very exciting.
Super exciting. Yeah. How cool is that?
I'm excited for that. So you're committing to more group workshops. And I would quite like to have maybe, I'm thinking having 5 one-to-one clients at a time.
Great.
Just thinking about, like you said earlier, how much energy you can bring and how much you can sustain, how many clients you can sustain having at one time. And so if I can work towards that first workshop, and if it goes well, repeating that, and having like 5 clients on an ongoing basis, that feels like a really nice place for me to aim to get to.
Amazing. That's a good one next, you know.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, kudos for having, you know, your own workshop and your own tools and your own kind of approach. I think that's fantastic. You know, that's, it shows how much progress you've taken, you know, how you've stepped into kind of being the coach and also being the kind of the leader in that environment, which is awesome. What was the date again?
Saturday the 28th of September.
And where might interested parties be able to find out more information about this?
My PakiraMoney.com website.
Brilliant. Done. Plug. Done. What next for me? I don't know. I don't know 100%. But there's a few really interesting opportunities.
Favorite.
I don't know. Yeah, that's been, you know, that's a great thing that's come out of this, is like being okay with not knowing. But holding that alongside wanting to plan and be intentional, right?
Yeah.
Those two things, you know, they don't have to cancel each other out. There's a bit of both. I'm doing more training. So between September and December, I'll become a certified, an associate certified coach.
That's awesome.
From the International Coaching Federation, with over 120 hours of practice.
That's so awesome.
So that feels very exciting, and I've got a very structured process around that through the course that I'm doing with CTI.
Mm.
That feels incredible. You know, the first 3-day intensive was just so much growth, so much learning. I've employed so much of what I learned already in the session since. Very excited about the rest of that. So rest of 2019 looks like investing quite a lot of money, time and energy in my continued growth and that learning as a coach. Mm. I'm getting very close to pulling the trigger on starting to do some dad coaching. Specifically, I'm holding a space for dads to show up. And have meaningful conversation around what it means to be a dad. It's one of the most important parts of my life. I'm endlessly fascinated by it. I have a natural, deep and abiding curiosity for the experience of dads and for the experience of children and how they're parented. Very specifically by dads in this context. I love mums, they're the best. You need them too, ideally. And so for me, I really want to hold this space for dads. So I've recently gone to a dad's group, and I think I'm in the process of just building out what that looks like. The vision is for a program called Growing Dads. And so, yeah, that's taking shape. More news to follow. Second to that, really, really interested in how organizations become coaching organizations of sorts, organizations that are deliberately developmental, that focus as much on their bottom line as they do on helping people to become better people within and through the work they do in the organization. And a big part of that is coaching and developing cultures and organizations that prioritize human development, not, you know, workplace development skills, but real humans flourishing. And the challenges that that faces. So lots of kind of stuff that's a little bit emergent, less specificity than I'd like at this stage. That's what the next few weeks will be, is making sense of that.
Some more experiments.
More experiments. Long live the experiments.
Quite.
To finish off, I just wanted to express my gratitude to you mainly, for turning up in this in such an awesome way in the last 100 days, for genuinely being my partner, you know, during this 100 days. And, you know, not that long ago, you gave me a really touching gift, which was a bracelet, you know, a bracelet connected to one of the 17 SDGs that was about working in partnership. You have one and I have one. And, you know, this has really taught me the value of investing in a true partnership. And so for that, I'm really, really grateful. I'm grateful to all my clients for showing up. I'm grateful to myself for believing in myself and investing. And I'm just really grateful for having had this space. So thank you.
Me too. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, let's do it all again next year. we'll catch up again soon. I'm sure there's more to come.
Thanks, Scott.